Superpower Up Podcast, the show that lifts the voice of love from orgasms to superpowers and everything in between.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Sex, Love, and Superpowers Podcast Show. We've got a very special edition for you today because I have with me Dr. Ame Cates Sullivan, and she is not only a fabulous person who I'm going to tell you all about, but she is also a new up-and-coming host. So she's going to have her own show with the Superpower Up podcast. So I'm absolutely thrilled to have her on as she prepares her own show for you all that will be airing in a little while. We don't know the exact timing, but yay for a new show. And let me tell you, get excited, because let me tell you about her and why her show is going to be awesome. And she is awesome. So, Ame Cates Sullivan is an award-winning, best-selling author focusing on mythology and folklore for the modern age. Dr. Sullivan has co-owned and ran the Healing Center of Santa Monica in the mid-1990s and continues to offer private consultations and runs workshops for people interested in the heroine's journey. She obtained her BA with honors at Hollins University and her master's and doctorate degrees in literature from Columbia University and King's College in London. She is also the owner and president of Infinite Light Publishing. Her books include Consider This, Tracking the Deer, The Wind Horse, and 3 Days in the Light, as well as an award-winning children's series including Sparkle and the Gift, Sparkle and the Light, Ella's Magic, and The Rainbow Dragon's Emerald. Her bestseller, A Story of Becoming, sold over 250,000 ebooks and won 18 literary awards. Her books on Celtic mythology include Legends of the Grail, Stories of Celtic Goddesses, and Heroines of Avalon and Other Tales. She has won over 30 literary awards, and she is here today with us to talk about the divine feminine in Celtic mythology. So welcome to the show, Ame.
Well, thank you so much for having me.
Absolutely. I am excited for this conversation. But before we dive in, will you please tell our listeners what your superpowers are?
Absolutely. You know, years ago, I went out beside a river and I found this swan feather, and I wasn't quite sure where it came from, but I picked it up. And I realized as I started to fly through the air that my superpower was air. That I could actually fly with the swan all through the universe, collecting stories that people needed all over the world.
Brilliant! And so you have been collecting these stories, and this is, you know, we talk a lot about sex on this show, obviously, because it's called Sex, Love, and Superpowers, and a lot about relationships. And this topic today is a little bit different, and yet also super relevant. You've been collecting stories about the goddesses, especially Celtic goddesses, for a long time now, right?
Yes, about 35 years. Yeah. And speaking of sexuality, you know, the Celtic tradition, they it's a culture of life, so they absolutely love sacred sexuality. And my husband, who is 99% Irish, has been on this journey with me. So I've had this wonderful companion, you know, as we bring the culture of life back together again.
I love that you call it that, the culture of life. And I think that it's true of most indigenous and roots cultures, that there has been a celebration of sexuality and a celebration of fecundity and life bringing acts. And we have so much fear and taboo in our culture around it, which is, I mean, why I started this show. So I'm really excited to have this conversation with you. I'm curious if you could share with our listeners sort of how you got started on this journey of investigating the goddess.
Well, I actually started in England in the 80s, early 1980s. And a couple of things happened. I was given this overseas research award, and my job was to go and gather or to understand and study the work of Lady Gregory, who was a folklorist and a playwright in Ireland. She was one of the main patrons of W.B. Yeats and started the Abbey Theatre, and was one of the people that was responsible for bringing Celtic mythology back to universities and to back. Actually, she reinstated Gaelic in schools, because for a long time, if people told Gaelic stories or Celtic stories or, you know, spoke Gaelic, they could be killed. So they're not as well known as the Greco-Roman stories for that reason. They were suppressed. And when I was over there gathering these, there were a couple things that happened, because there's always this personal quest too, right? There's a piece that had, now I knew that my ancestors were from England and had been told all kinds of stories. And actually we still have our legacy farm in Virginia, and our English ancestors are buried there. So I was raised with this sort of tradition of storytelling. But what happened when I was in England was that I was very excited to be working on this doctorate. And my uncle that I was living with committed suicide, and it was such a shock. And I had an existential crisis, and all of a sudden, the world of academia wasn't really enough, and I needed to find some kind of understanding of the spiritual world. What happened to him? Where did he go? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And so I wound up doing pilgrimages. At first I was looking for Mary Magdalene, and wound up in Glastonbury, and got really, really caught up with the myths and legends of Joseph of Arimathea and the Holy Grail, which is one way to weave the Western tradition of the goddess spike together again. But what I started encountering were these presences that are very real. Actually, when you go to the places, they're these sacred places where you can encounter deities. I'm sure in the Native American tradition, that's also true. Mm-hmm. And so I had some very powerful encounters, and it seemed like Danu and Eru, some of these Irish goddesses, were the ones who started leading me on these quests. And so I would go on these journeys physically as well as shamanically to go back into these old cairns and listen to the dreams of the earth and remember my roots. remember, you know, why I'm here, and also where we go. That was the other part that was really important, and it really came to peace with what happened to my uncle. Felt that I could continue my conversation with him through the veils, and so that's a whole conversation right there too. It's like how you walk between the worlds with those you love.
Yeah, well, and I think it's so interesting you bring that up. That was absolutely a huge catalyst for my own spiritual journey as well, was my brother's death. He overdosed on heroin. And so I can absolutely relate with this. Like, it's like this instinctual urge to go. It's like, where did you go? You know, and you go on this quest, this epic quest to find where they went. And there's a, it's an amazing journey for sure. So, we're not going to dive into it, cause we have to go to a quick break, and I think there's a lot to discuss here. So before we go to break, will you tell our listeners where they can go to find out more about you and your work and your books?
Yes, you can go to my website, annkatesullivan.com. And my name is spelled A-Y-N. So if you Google me, I usually come straight up. But annkatesullivan.com, and there you can sign up for a newsletter, and which I will write again soon. And there are all kinds of books you can find, all sorts of podcasts, things you can listen to, and I try to keep inspiring people. That's sort of my role. So I hope you'll go and feel like you can find your roots and maybe some of your branches also on the site.
Beautiful. And soon you'll be able to find her on the Superpower Up podcast as well. So stay tuned for that. We're talking with Ayn Kate Sullivan about the divine feminine in Celtic mythology. More when we get back. Stay tuned.
Are you here to change the world? Do you talk about things like vibration, frequency, awakening, and consciousness? Are you pretty sure you have superpowers? The Superpower Net is unlike normal coaching programs and conscious communities. We provide training, intuitive guidance, peer-to-peer learning, intensive one-on-one coaching, and a high vibrational network of people just like you. When you join the net, you get 24/7 access to a collaborative group of people who support you as you master your personal power and unlock your superpowers. If you're ready to use your superpowers to change the world, then join the Superpower Net today. Visit superpowerexperts.com/the net to learn more.
Okay, we're back. So right before the break, I mean, we were kind of sharing how for both of us, it seems like death is actually what led us into this deep spiritual pilgrimage and discovery of all these other worlds. And I'd love to talk about that a little bit more, because I do think that part of at least my understanding of the goddess and the divine feminine is that we are reclaiming right now, I think, not just culturally, but also globally. There's all these things that have been sort of taboo. And especially in Western culture, we don't talk about, we don't know how to have a relationship with. Sex is one of them, and death is another one. And these seem like very much realms of the goddess, realms that were considered sacred, and there was an understanding of them held by older cultures that has been lost and yet seems to be resurging. Can you talk about that a little bit, about what your experience with that is in uncovering all of these goddesses on this journey?
Yes, I would love to. So one of the deities that I really love is called the Kaliach, or the old woman of the world. And if we're not speaking about her in a cultural sense, and we go to a more of a global sense, we tend to know her as Gaia or Mother Earth. And, you know, we can think of her as an archetype, and we can think of her as the deity or being. But there are places you can go where you really do crawl in, and it's usually a Samhain or around November 1st. But this is the, right now, August 1st is the goddess festival. So there are also different times when the veils are thin, when you can crawl through, and you can really, if you learn, so the goddess tradition is really about learning to open up and receive information, to open up to your clairvoyance, your clairaudience, your clairsentience, finding your superpowers and understanding that they're real, and understanding that maybe there was a reason that the goddess tradition was given, because people, if once you found your superpowers, you're very hard to enslave. Mm-hmm. So one thing that I just went through, and I'll talk about it, was that last year my father died. And he was a brilliant man. He loved Native traditions. He was an author himself of many books, a winemaker, and basic Renaissance man. And he knew he was going to die. And I had been doing some Celtic shamanic work with John and Catelyn Matthews at Oxford. And we had just finished doing Walkers Between the Worlds. And when I came back to Virginia to see him, and he was standing in the kitchen, and he looked at me and he said, I'm done. Mm-hmm. Walk me to my room. And so I walked him to his room, and he was so, and this was, that's what's so beautiful about what happened with him, is that he was so open. You know, he had moments when he was frightened, but because he was so good at inquiry and he was so intelligent, he was curious about what was happening to him. And he said, "How do you think this is going to go?" And I said, "I really don't know, but why don't we face your bed? We'll point your bed so that you can see the sun as it sets. And it might be that as the sun sets, you'll go into the setting sun and you'll find your friends on the other side." Mm-hmm. And so we did that, and he was really gung-ho. He was like, 1, 2, 3, let's go. And I was like, "Dad, wait a second. You got to say goodbye to everybody. There's a whole process here." So I was kind of slowing him down, and it, interestingly enough, it snowed. So everything shut down. People couldn't, there were, my sisters were able to be there, my mom, we had, apart from one friend who was a doctor, there was no other medical assistance or anything. So it was just us. And we were able to sing, and he was reciting poetry, and people would go out, and he would say, come lay in the bed with me and walk to the other side so I can talk to my friends so I know where I'm going. And so I would lay in the bed with him, and we would go over. And I actually thought that his family would be there, but no, he really did have some friends. One fellow was the minister. I was kind of surprised to see him, but he was there, and he came straight away, and we started talking, and we went across something that looked like the River Styx. And there was a certain point where they said, you can't go any further. You have to wait for us, but we'll be back. And after a little while, he came back and he told me all kinds of stories about what he'd seen. And then he sort of came back into his body. So it was a process that took about a week. And then even after he left his body, he would come in and check his body and leave. And so we did a 3-day vigil, with his body as he really started to learn who he was as an essence, as opposed to a physical form. Mm-hmm. It was when it was going on, it felt ecstatic, which was bizarre. Of course, later after he left, I had my morning time, but he gave me such a gift, you know, being that open.
Yeah,
being that open to the mysteries.
So when you say that you were laying there with him and you were seeing this, you're speaking more in like a shamanic realm, like you were journeying with him.
We journeyed together. Mm-hmm. We did journey together. We called on some deities that work with both of us, and we did a shamanic journey together. And he was able to cross. He always wanted sort of this, maybe because he was a winemaker, but he would always go into this kind of Bacchian realm. And his friend, the minister, kept trying to take him to more of a heavenly realm, but he didn't want to do that. You know, it was very interesting.
Well, it's amazing to me. I mean, I love that you say that there was kind of an ecstasy around it, because I think that is what's possible, and we have this relationship with death. I mean, of course it's sad because someone that we love is transitioning, and the way that we've known them is no longer going to be the way that we can know them. And yet there is this essence. I was talking with someone about this just the other day, how it's like you get to know a person's, like, the difference between the density of their personality and their essential nature. When we know someone and love someone who crosses over to the other side, there is this distinction that we get to make, right? And it's the personality that we mourn, but the essential nature we can still connect with even after they're gone from their physical body.
Absolutely. I made a deal with him that I'm also act as a minister. So he asked me to do his funeral, which was quite powerful. Mm. And I said, okay, I'll go ahead and spread the ashes, but I need you to leave me a sign that you're okay. And so I went up. I had been studying the Oum with my kids, actually. We'd all been in Ireland studying the Oum, which is the ancient Irish writing. They look a little bit like runes. And so we go up to the place where he wanted these ashes spread, and hanging right in the spot was an 8-foot sign. it was a ladder that had been bent, but it read Oum. It read in Oum, it read elder. Mm. And my kid, all of us just stopped and looked at it and went, oh, he left us a sign that it means rebirth in the Celtic tradition. Mm. So the elder tree is the one that will lead you to your rebirth. And there it was hanging. So that was one thing that we all saw. And then the other times, I had visitations and felt him with me, and we were able to have some conversations, especially in the first 33 days. And then he moved on, and now occasionally, yes, but I don't think it's something that we should be frightened of, actually. I know my family members were going through a lot as it happened, and when he was in his active dying phase, even the doctors were saying, "Can you just tell me what his aura looks like? what's actually happening?" And there was a reverence. Something changed because this was not someone you were going to save physically in this world, even though would have liked to. We had to journey with him. We had to dream with him. We had to learn to consciously dream. We had to learn that all of us have rainbow bodies. And the lovely part about that is that we're eternal. You know, that the spark or the essence means that we're eternal. And we might, as you said, would drop the personality or pieces of it. But how comforting in a way to know that someone that you love deeply can still be, in communication with you.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I'm really intrigued that you had doctors asking what color your dad's aura was. I'm like, what kind of doctors were they?
There's a fellow that we work with. He was a very good friend of my father, very brilliant. He's MD, Stanford trained, but he also works with homeopathy and so forth. And he's very interested in energy medicine. And so when I was observing my father's field, I knew when the act of dying had started because the silver cord in the back of the neck just came away. Just as when you give birth to a child, you know, there's a point when the umbilicus just starts to give way because it's no longer needed. Mm-hmm. And then when Dad was in his active dying phase, so the silver cord at the back of the neck came away. And as soon as that happened, I started telling the doctor that it has actually disconnected. So he only has a very short period of time now. And that's when we were able to start singing. And it was interesting to see, the aura change and how it started to, it sort of the colors collapsed and then there was silver. And then he was able to move around, separately from the body.
You just said that's when we were able to start singing. Mm-hmm. Explain that a little bit. I'm really intrigued.
When he started actually exiting the body, it seemed as though there was some kind of crack between the worlds. There was an opening. I think the same thing happens when you're born. When someone's mm-hmm. born, there's this opening between the worlds. In this case, a beloved was departing, but that's when this feeling of ecstasy came in, mm-hmm. and it was partially because there was so much love coming from his ancestors, his mother, his whole lineage that were waiting for him, his friends that were waiting for him on the other side, all the guides that he worked with, they were all there loving him, birthing him. It's almost like a birth in reverse. So they were birthing him into the other worlds. And it was very, so we were singing as this happened. You know, it reminded me of the ladies of the lake, you know, as they're taking King Arthur back to Avalon. You know, they're singing to him as they take the wounded king back to the other world. And with total honor and respect for what he had given us, you know, all of the gifts and all the love for those years. And, it was as though we were surrounded by deities that all from all realms that had their heads bowed. So such honor and respect.
Now, is this in your study and research, have you found that to be kind of, an old ritual around the deathbed to surround the person who's crossing over and to sing to them?
Yes, to sing them to the other side. I was taught the tradition by a woman. She never wants me to say her name, but she was a British healer. And she was the one I worked with when my uncle died. Mm-hmm. And I had, at that time, I wasn't very spiritual. And after he died, every morning he would stand by my bed calling my name, and it freaked me out. I thought, oh my gosh, I'm schizophrenic. What's happening to me? And anyway,
right? So I remember that. I remember talking to my brother in the car being like, I'm going crazy.
this doesn't happen. This is, you know, there's no cultural context for it, right? So I luckily I found this healer who just explained to me what was happening. She said, well, he got stuck in between dimensions there. No one's crossed him over. And I said, oh, well, can we cross him over? And she said, yes, but it will take some work because he had things left unfinished, you know? Mm-hmm. And so we really spent a year working together to help him, in communication with him, with my whole family, with all the members of my family and his children, or his son. He only had one son, to help him resolve, you know, and move on. And then and there was such a feeling of relief for the whole family dynamic when he actually crossed. Mm-hmm. So as part of that, I was accompanying her to different people's houses, and was with her many times when someone either crossed or was just crossing. And she always did the same thing. Well, you know, everyone's unique, but basically the same thing happens for everybody, which is that you call on, and it's, you know, in the Judeo-Christian tradition, there are angels, and in the sort of Celtic tradition, they're devas or deities, but they're really very similar. Yeah. You call in these guardians to help someone find their way home. And singing tends to invite these guardians in. And then once they're invited in, then they very carefully, it's so delicate, it's so careful. You know, they just very, very carefully and delicately help the person move to the next place, you know, with absolute grace and ease, move to their next home. And some people are worried, you know, and other people are like, Dad, they're ready to go. You know, it depends on the person. But always this light opens up. There's a light that opens up, and there's so many dimensions, you know. There's so many dimensions you can walk into. Mm-hmm. But the person seems to know their home, and they just find their way through that light right to the place where their ancestors are, and off they go. And it's this practice we forgot. I remember the first time I really saw it clairvoyantly, these stairs opening up and the lights and so forth. And not only did the one person go across, but then about 250 other people went. And I burst into tears. I was like, what is this stairway? And why did all of those people have to wait so long? Mm-hmm. In order to go across? And she just explained that people have forgotten that the world is animated. Yeah. And that you have to ask, you know, so the souls can return home. And
it reminds me of a very powerful ceremony that I was at actually when I was pregnant with my daughter. There's a medicine man from Greenland named Ananank. He goes by Uncle. And he was doing a 4-day ceremony to honor, in his words, he put it, all of the people who had been, all of the souls that had been impacted by the events of September 11th. Mm-hmm. And it was in upstate New York. And I remember there was one particular ceremony. I mean, the gathering was a 4-day event, but there was one particular ceremony where it was like, okay, we are now going to release the souls who weren't able to be released. And it was like, I remember seeing, I'm not usually someone who sees spirits and things like that. I can sense. But I remember it was like there were spirits packed into the room and like spilling outside the walls. It was like all of these beings trying to come in to receive this healing. And I remember watching them change. So a lot of them were in these like muted tones of grays and browns, and watching them turn into light and like pop.
Yeah.
There's mm-hmm. so much mm-hmm. that we don't understand, right? Mm-hmm. And yet that these ancient cultures do.
Exactly. They do. They do. And we lost some. I think we really, in our adventure into our Judeo-Christian world, we lost quite a bit of that. And yeah. I think that really happened when the goddess became a ghost, the father, son, and the ghost, right? So a lot of the work that I've been doing has been to reweave those traditions back in. There are in the Tibetan culture, there are 18,000 year traditions of worshiping the goddess that are unbroken.
Yeah.
In our world, in our Western civilization, they're broken traditions. So you do, in a way, have to sing them back together again. You have to, or at least I've had to, go back to these sites where you, okay, might do a certain amount of research, but then I have to sit in the site and sing to the deity so that I can remember what was broken, what was lost, and how to weave that back together again.
Yeah, and from your understanding, why is that so important right now?
Well, if we've been in really culture of death for quite some time, and that's, you know, according to the Mayans, it's just the cycle we were in. What do we do? That was our cycle. Mm-hmm. But according to the Mayans, in 2012, we shifted, and that was the first time, they say, in 5,125 years, mm-hmm. that the divine feminine has been able to inhabit the earth and have a voice. And at that point, during our ceremonies and so forth, it was very clear to me that, of course, we all want to heal. It's about collective healing, but that particular strand, those strands of the feminine, of the goddess energy, which is really culture of life energy, it's time for that to return so that we can have the promised flowering of the ages. Of course, right now everyone says, oh, it's the end of the world and it's all doom. And I think there's a shift going on.
Yes.
And some of these, the indigenous cultures, most of the indigenous cultures understand that. And they understand how to walk with the new energies that are coming to the planet right now.
Yeah, but part of that is also, I mean, that culture of life is honoring the earth herself and the mm-hmm. the seasons and the rhythms that come and are born from nature.
Absolutely. In Heroines of Avalon and Legends of the Girl, Story of Celtic Goddesses, actually I think Heroines of Avalon is the one that has the eight-wheel calendar at the back. And can't, so we, if you follow that eight-wheel calendar, it's pretty easy to move back into rhythm, the natural cycles and rhythm with the earth herself. It's a very lovely calendar.
What is this calendar? It's the
Celtic wheel of the year. Uh-huh. And so it usually starts with Samhain, which is November 1st. And so they say the Druids understood this. So let me talk about who Druids were for a minute. Because Druids, first of all, could be men and women. Mm-hmm. And they were the spiritual wisdom keepers of the British Isles and Ireland. And they were kind of demonized. They were so, they did human sacrifice and all this. I don't really think it's true. We've only found one case of human sacrifice. We're not even sure that was from a Druid. But you have to have a reason to kill people off. So of course they had to be demonized, but anyway, they were people who trained for 20 years to activate their superpowers, right? First they would learn 250 stories of their people. Then maybe depending on whether you feel, you know, or whether you see or whether you hear, you would develop your oracular skills. You would become an ovate and a seer. And after 20 years of all of that, maybe you would become a Druid. And that meant that you were a spiritual teacher for your people. They knew the Oum, the language of the trees, and they knew in journeying through these, depending on the system, there are 22, 25 trees. They could journey through these trees, in the oak Druids, mean the wisdom of the oak, right? So they would journey through these trees into the dimensions where they could get access certain wisdom for their people. So So the Druids had the worked with this calendar. I think the calendar might be older than the Druids, but now it's been reintroduced. The Wiccan movement and the Druids got together and put this wheel back together again instead of in a new revival that's been going on in the UK. Obod is one of the really great, actually great group of people who've been putting it back together again. But the old calendar, if you go to any of the old wheels or the it's all there. You just have to go back and find it again. So it starts, we have it as Halloween or, when the veil's thin and you can hear the voices of the ancestors. And so you would go into a cairn, you go into an old cave, or you go into a dark place and you would dream, you would, in that ceremony for 3 days, in the old days, they would pull the skulls out, you know, but you would dream for 3 days and you would ask your ancestors about what their dreams were, what their hopes were. And then you might dream with the earth herself. What was in the pot of the old woman of the world? What was brewing?
And I think the timing is fascinating because, I mean, the November 1st, that's also the Day of the Dead in Mexico and in different Central American traditions. Also in Romania, where my ancestors are from, there's a day of honoring the deceased right around the same time. So I think it's fascinating that these calendars kind of line up no matter where you are on the planet.
Exactly. And it might be there's some truth to it.
Yeah,
you know, that's the time when the veils are thin and the indigenous people understood that and they felt it and they worked with it. They honored it, you know, and I have crawled into these cairns with my hand over my head when in the dark and done these things. And it's really powerful to do it and to realize, gosh, there is this bubbling, there is this dreaming, there are these seeds that are being held, want to come forth and we can be co-creators and help them come forth if we know how to work with the system, you know? So then after that, there's the dreaming. So that takes you into winter solstice, which people know. And that's when, the first little bit of light comes. And generally that was the time to honor the goddess and the void, the dark mother, the one who's dreaming, the one who's creating. And so you honor the goddess really deeply there. And then there's Imbolc or St. Bridget's Day. It became when the first little snowdrops come out we might be expressing the first ideas that have come from our dreams. And then that moves into the spring equinox, you know, when all the energies are dancing, the masculine, the feminine energies are dancing together and the world's becoming fertile and we can bring our ideas, you know, the energy's rising and we can bring our ideas into full manifestation, which leads to Beltane in the Celtic tradition, May 1st, when the god and goddess dance together. And it's a complete celebration of sexuality, which is lovely.
Yeah.
Infertility, yes. With culture of life, we make love and have partnerships so we can bring our next generation into being. And if we do that consciously, gosh, you know, what a world we could live into, yeah? and that goes to summer solstice when, of course, the light is bright and strong, and so we have all of our creative energies at its most powerful. And then now, about the August 1st, we have Lammas or Lunasa, and we're starting to honor what the land has given us, and we're starting to harvest and celebrate all of that. And then we go into the equinox, the fall equinox, when again there's a dance between the feminine and the masculine, but they're starting to go to sleep for the year, and so they pass the energy back to the Kaliach, the old woman of the world, who keeps the life, you know, in her pot through the dark years. So I've always loved that the harmony of that, the rhythm in that Celtic tradition.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's a wholeness to it, and there's a, you know, it's a cycle, and it's a never ending repeating cycle. Mm-hmm. There's a real comfort to that.
I think so. Obviously they believed in rebirth, and they had no fear. The Celts had no fear of death because they knew when they crossed. That's what made them ferocious warriors too, because they knew if they died in the battlefield or wherever that they would be celebrating with their ancestors on the other side. They were mm-hmm. very clear about that. Mm.
Yeah, it's fascinating to me because there's so many crossovers from the North American indigenous cultures that I've studied with, and some of these stories, you know, you hear it's like the warriors, and they go into battle, they would always say, today's a good day to die. And it was, I think, similar, because you would go to the happy hunting grounds if it was your day, and you would be with your ancestors and feasting and all of that again.
Yes. And it's probably very true. You know, it is probably true if you really are with people when that's going on and you're crossing with them. And I think that there was an agenda to make people fear death so that they could be controlled. Because people that don't fear death can't be controlled. They can't be enslaved.
Say more about that. What's your understanding? I mean, just from the history. I mean, I know the history. Some of our listeners might not. No, the history, and this horrific history in Europe of sort of systematic wiping out of people who lived this way, believed this way.
Yeah, it was systematic and it was brutal. So Mona was, it's now known as the Isle of Anglesey, which is off the west coast of Wales. And it was known as Mona, and that was where the Druids were trained and the kind of the spiritual stronghold, and it's still really fascinating to visit. But with the Roman invasion, and this was at a time when there was complete equality in that tradition between men and women. Women were druidesses and healers and medicine women and judges and everything you can possibly imagine. So they were very honored. And there's the famous woman called, well, some people say Boadicea or Boadica is how we usually say it. He was a queen who actually almost wiped out the Romans. They raped her daughter since she wasn't having it. But with the end of Boadicea, that was really the end of the empowered, Celtic queen. Mm. After that, the Roman agenda started really coming in. And so in the King Arthur stories, I write about it quite a bit, because you start to, that's where the feminine starts to disappear. She really, all of the different faces of the goddess really have to fit into the one vessel of Mary. And at least, thank goodness, she existed as Mary, but all the many deities had to become one. And what happened, it was, I think really Council of Nicaea had a lot to do with it. Which is where there was an agenda. This was a couple hundred years after Christ's death. And they decided at this council what was going to be taught and what wasn't, or what was going to be how we were going to worship. And there wasn't a whole lot of choice. So once they decided which books we were going to read, that was it. Any free thinker or Gnostic or someone who had any direct connection was considered a heretic, and they were hunted down and killed. So I think that it's a tragedy in a way, but you know, again, maybe it's the cultural story that we're learning about. But it goes all the way through. I think something like 8 million women were burned or tortured or killed at that time. So it was a lot. And so when we start talking about the goddess tradition, I often see I see women flinch, because many of us have memories of being tortured and killed, and if you can really cut people from the belly down, so that you disconnect people from their roots, and you tell them that worshiping by a stream or a river or something is evil. You make nature evil, you make the body evil, and you make sexuality evil, you make everything feminine evil in all of your storytelling, and from Eve to, I mean, yeah. So at that point, And there was a, if you go back and really do some research, you can see that there was a complete agenda to make the all women, let's just call it evil. And when I say evil, I mean it's a distortion of life. It's lived backwards. So culture of life, the goddess, and you flip it, and it's, yeah.
Well, so, and is also worshiping someone on a cross. You look at the symbol that's being worshipped is a dead person.
It's you're worshiping someone who died. And, you know, and they don't, and what's in the tragedy about that is they didn't include the mysteries, because if you were going to church and you went, oh, well, he died, but then, oh, he was resurrected. And this is how you move through the Eleusinian mysteries and I think in the Asclepian temples and some of these other places, people were still doing, it was basically an old Egyptian practice of resurrection. So if they had actually taught that, it would have been great. But things like reincarnation were taken out. So you know that there was a complete political agenda, which was really not about helping people become enlightened and awake, and it was about controlling the masses, and that's what it was for. And if you kill enough people and you terrify enough people, then, you know, you stop caring about nature, and you stop caring about the feminine qualities, and you definitely run away from the goddess. And if you look at the world we're living in now, this is what you get.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. And so we're all doing our part to reclaim that. And it all of these areas, our connection with nature, our connection with our bodies, you know, this whole concept of original sin, that to have sex is a sin. To follow the culture of life is sinful. To perpetuate life is sinful. You know, that's a real mind fuck right there.
It's huge. And the thing too is that, you know, since women are the ones in charge of creating life, if the only way, you know, you have to control them. Otherwise, you don't know when the king's running off, when the king's off the battle, your knight's off the battle, you don't know whose children she's having. You know, so they did their best to control how the feminine was playing with life. And then at that point too, which is really crazy, is people stop, women in text stop having names. I did find, it's in Heroines of Avalon, but I did find the name of Percival's sister, who was the one who opened the gates to Saros, and her name is either Dundrana or Dundrane. And so she's actually the first Grail champion, but I had never heard of her. Nice. I think part of reweaving the goddess tradition has been finding the names of the women, the players who were involved in this. And if you take it back, so really, if you go back through the terrible burning times, and if you go back to the early traditions, you know, if you listen to the Mayans, they said 5,125 years. You have to go back really to the time of the Tuatha De Dunan in the Celtic tradition, and the time of the tall, beautiful people, the people of the Merline, the people who understood the sacred blueprints of the earth and how we all thrive. Those are lovely, lovely stories.
Mm. Well, I am so excited for your show, because I'm sure you're going to share some of them on your show. But before we go, will you tell us sort of what your desires are for that show, or what your plans are?
Oh, well, it's still emerging, but sure. I'm obviously so excited about the weaving of the traditions that bring the goddess back together again. And I really believe in God, goddess, all that is. So it's everything. But these particular strands are missing. And so I've worked with the Celtic tradition to bring back these ancient stories. Also the Judeo-Christian. I love some of those stories too. I love the history of the Cathars and Joseph of Arimathea, and also the Native American traditions. I hope some of those will be will be woven in also in the Greco-Roman traditions. And so what I'm hoping to do in the show and with some brilliant friends is to find our superpowers so that we can reweave this tradition so that we can flower, so that we can really blossom into this promise of the new age that we're meant to be moving into. This is meant to be the first dawn of the golden age, you know?
Yeah. I wish you could see the smile on my face right now. I'm so excited. Yay. Well, thank you so, so much for coming on the show today. This was awesome. And we went to all sorts of places I didn't expect as usual, but I love it. And it was so powerful and valuable. And I'm sure our listeners got some good stuff out of it. So thank you.
Oh, very good. It was just lovely to connect. And I look forward to more in the future.
Mm-hmm, me too. And to our listeners, I love you so much. Thank you for continuing to show up, for continuing to listen, for continuing to do your work as part of the reawakening that we're all inside of right now. Thank you, thank you, thank you. If you have not yet come and joined our Facebook group, Superpowers Are Real, please do so. Come and check out our programs, superpowerexperts.com/programs. And you can even go on our website, superpowerexperts.com, and take a quiz and find out what your superpowers are. Come and play with us. We love you so much. And until next time, go out and love yourself so that you can love the world more deeply. Many, many blessings.
Are you ready to discover your superpowers? Go now to superpowerexperts.com and take the superpower quiz today.